famous BK International Super Talent Scout, bringing to you live the best in the Northwest. BK presents, featuring international and local gospel artists, civic leaders and community workers, authors and bloggers, nonprofit organizations, and business leaders.
Tune in on demand on BKPresents.com.
BK Presents, promoting the good news in contemporary fashion.
Stop by and visit our podcast library today. Tell a friend to lock it in on BKPresents.com.
This is BK Presents. We're coming to you live from Rainier Avenue Radio World. I'm in the studios with Fatima Joy. She's in the background, and I'm sitting here with Anthony Townsend, and we're going to be talking about who he is and what he's up to right now. Excellent. So, man, this is the famous Townsend. Let's talk about your dad first. What is it like to be the son of Superintendent Sam Townsend?
Oh, man, it's great. It's a beautiful experience, you know, being able to journey through this life, being a pastor's son, you know, because we get front row seats to all the wisdom, all the knowledge, all the information that you need to survive. However, you're on a short rope because, you know, if you make a mistake, it's not going to be because you're naive. It's because, you know, you made the wrong decision intentionally because you got the right information already in you. You know what I mean?
All right. That's a good answer. How does he feel about your drink, like your play? Because this is a play about Judas?
Yeah, this is a play about Judas. Now, the play gives the audience members a different perspective than the cliched version that we get through, you know, the common, you know, betrayal. Oh, Judas betrayed Jesus. Well, we have all these books of the Bible from all these different disciples, but we don't have Judas's book that tells his side of the story. So my play is an innovative way of expressing Judas's side of the story. And we paint Judas as the villain in the story, in the cliched version, if you will, of the story.
You're going deep, man. You're going deep. Can we talk about this?
Oh, I was just going to give it to you, brother.
No, I'm just playing. Okay, let's talk about this. How did you find out that Judas actually wrote a book?
I didn't. That's not something that I'm applying to, like, factual. This is something that I constructed on my own. Okay. I don't know if he wrote a book. I'm sure that there's different historians that would probably say that he wrote a book, that he had a version. But I don't know how accurate that is, because, I mean, you go on Google something, you can find anything you want. This is basically
creative life.
Hey, you know what? That's excellent. This is a very creative way of expressing a different point of view. The same story, but in a different point of view.
What perspective are you giving Judas? What light are you giving Judas in your play?
The light I'm giving to Judas is that Judas was just a puppet. He had some powers behind him that were the one. Where did he get the money from? Who gave him the orders to betray Jesus? See, that's what I'm getting at. So we demonize Judas, but we forget the powers that led to it, you know, that pushed the issue of putting Jesus on the cross. Judas didn't put Jesus on the cross.
I was just talking to my brother, and we were talking about how Peter denied Christ and went fishing.
Yeah.
Judas betrayed Christ and he just like killed himself, and we were like, did he really have to kill himself? Could he have gotten forgiveness? Cause like Peter denied Christ and he just went back fishing. This dude was so depressed, so in a dark place, that he decided to kill himself. And a lot of times people get in a dark place and they sabotage their life.
Right. That's an unfortunate reality of you know, just doing making wrong decisions, you know? it has a lasting effect, and sometimes that effect is depression. And depression leads you in a dark place, which, you know, in this situation, it led him to suicide.
Have you heard of the perspective that Judas was trying to force Jesus' hand to show his power and greatness? Have you heard that perspective?
I heard that perspective. However, I don't want to get too deep into that, because when we do, then because it was, you know, over 2,000 years ago, the what ifs, that's those scenarios can go on forever, because no one is going to know what's concrete. But what is concrete is what's written in the Bible. And what's written in the Bible is also that the high priests and the scribes and the Pharisees, those are the ones that were behind, that pursued Judas to get him to do this. It wasn't Judas himself. He didn't just wake up one morning and say, hey, you know, I'm going to betray Jesus. You know, he was pursued. And so this, my play, gives light to that whole other dimension of this whole story of the betrayal of Jesus Christ.
Let's go back a little bit. How did you create the play, and how did you come up with the different scenes for the play?
I created the play. Well, my writing style is as such. I have a desired beginning and I have a desired end. And in time, you know, in prayer, maybe sometimes at nighttime, I wake up in the middle of the night and write a scene. You know, just the scenes come to me in time, but I start off with a desired beginning and a desired end.
Mm-hmm. How many, you say you did the play like 5 times around the Seattle, Tacoma area.
Yes.
What was the response that you got from people?
Everyone that I spoke to had eyes wide open, and they were like, wow, that's beautiful. I didn't know you had that in you, and they wanted more. That was the overall consensus, is that they wanted more. And because when we performed it, we had a shorter version. The version that I'm intending on beginning the filming on in March is the expanded version.
How many, what character do you play in the...
I play Judas himself.
Oh, my God.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, my God. So, now, this is what I want to know. When you play Judas, how did it make you feel that you knew that you had to portray him, that you had to betray Judas in your play? How did that make you feel on the inside? Because I know you grew up in church, you love Jesus Christ, you know about God, you've been filled with the Holy Spirit before. How did it make you feel to actually betray Judas?
It made me feel as if I have a duty. And not necessarily that my overall duty is to portray Judas, but my overall duty is to do something. You know, I was one day in prayer, and I'm sorry for going this direction with you, but one day in prayer, I was asking God for mercy. And then I thought, I don't know where this answer came from, but if at the end of your life, and God is to say, well done, well, what did you do for him to say well done for? You know, how can he say well done if you haven't done anything? And so my duty is to get out there and do something. And this story of Judas, it came to one of my family members, and it came to my group, and it just expanded. And so this is my way of doing something. This is not my end all be all. This is the beginning of the works that I do, you know, to hopefully, you know, widen the message of Christ. Expand it.
Okay, so how many people are in your play when you take it to a church?
There's 10 solid actors, 10 solid actors. Sometimes you can get extras from some of the people in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
My style of acting is I love to get the audience participation. I love to find ways where I can, you know, maybe pinpoint someone who's more attentive than the others and get their cooperation. There's different methods that I use, but all of them have been deemed successful.
So you're going to shoot it like a film in March. What other plays have you written?
Well, this is the main one that I've written. I've participated in some writing parts with. There was one that I recently did about my mother. I didn't write it, but I acted in it, and then I added some writing parts into it. But I can't take the credit for that. Linnell Townsend, my aunt.
My wonder twin.
Yeah,
Linnell.
She's wow. a genius. It was called Becoming Gwendolyn. So that we did. That's the last one that we did.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it was beautiful. I played my father.
Oh, can you know, man? Your father, like when I watch your father, like when I watch your father, like, preach on Facebook or Facebook Live, you know, just, like, knowing you and your brother and Sam and your sister, I mean, or you see your dad, I notice, like, when he preaches in other churches, he's still authentic. He really, like, shares his whole life, you know, like, you know, like the stories of like being a cop and not carrying a gun and just like your right. dad would like do so many things and then like your mom would like take in so many people to be you guys' brothers and sisters, people that didn't have family. So right. it's like the Townsend is like an enlarged family because your parents like really love people. Like most people love people, but right. most people don't love people enough to bring them into their house and raise them, right. allow them to live. What was it like to have extended family?
It's beautiful because it grooms the way, it molds the way or molds who you are as who I became as a young man.
Yeah.
It that's where I get my passion from. That's where I get my love for people from, you know, is my parents. And so having that experience, you know, just having kids in the house that weren't blood relatives, but we still called them brother, we still called them sister. You know, there's no separation, there's no difference in the way they're treated in our household. And so wow. it's just a beautiful experience. And, you know, still to this day, you know, I consider they're my brothers and they're my sisters and we're all, you know, we're all family, you know. Brother, me and you are family, you
yeah.
know. We're family, you know, just by the way, the respect that you've given me and you've allowed me to get on the radio with you, bro, and you know what I'm saying? The love that you showed me, that's brotherly love right there. So I look at
yeah.
you as family, too. So that's
yeah.
how it is, man.
I really like that about your whole family because they take everybody in as they are, whether you're perfect
yes,
or
sir.
Not perfect. And then Maurice used to be my best friend because
yeah,
I used
man.
To live right across the hall from Maurice.
Yes,
and
sir.
He used to always encourage me. And then so I can understand, like, when you say, like, it's one thing to work with somebody, but it's another thing to be working with somebody and they have your heart, they have your vision. That means
yeah.
they put a little extra in it. That means they want to go. They'll do more than just looking at it as if it's a contract.
Oh, exactly, exactly. And bringing it back to my cousin Maurice, yeah, man, that's where I first met you, bro. When I used to do the music back then, I used to be a rapper back then, remember? I used to
oh,
try
yeah,
to rap on
yeah.
his little DR5.
Oh, my God, man.
Yeah, man, I used to come over there, and you was next door. That's when I first met you. But Maurice's cut was cut from that same cloth, man. He used to bring homeless people to church. Some of them people, well, one particular brother that he brought to church still goes there. He's been in and out over the years, but right now you go there on Sunday and he's singing in the choir. And this man, you know what? That was a loving brother, a powerful brother, man. I just want to shout out to that man wherever you are, Maurice. We still talking about you. You know what I'm saying? 20 some odd years later, after you're gone, brother.
Man, the thing about Maurice that would really I would be with Maurice. And one time we went down to the Key Arena. He said, man, I see you doing something here. right? Mm-hmm. Then after he passes away, I actually do something in the key arena. I'm going, wow, this is like, he said, yeah, I see you doing something in here.
Yeah.
I was like, and that was actually prophetic. And I think he really loved everybody and he really encouraged everybody.
Oh, he did.
He cut my hair, too.
Hey, you know, that brother encouraged me because, you know, I wasn't your typical rapper back in the day. You
right.
know? I was a pastor's son, so all I knew was the intelligence that I've read from books, and I went to school, and, you know what I'm saying, all the intelligent, you know, delivery of my raps. And that's not what was hot back then. Back in the 90s, either you was a gangster artist or you was a nobody. And I wasn't a gangster artist, but that brother used to encourage me and I kept on, and so I without him I wouldn't have had as many life experiences, positive life experiences that I had. And so that brother, you know, he runs in my family, man. Maurice, that's my blood cousin. He got that Townsend love in him,
man. This is like when I think about Maurice, and we had this service at your dad's church. And we walk into the church, and somebody said, look up, there's some eagles. Because Maurice is in the eagles. And then there was eagles flying around the church. That was just like a surreal. When somebody said, look up at the eagles, everything just started going in slow motion. Wow. So what I want to talk about, how did you transition from rapping to wanting to do plays and movies? What was your turning point?
Well, it was a gradual thing. It wasn't something that just happened automatically. When I would rhyme, you know, I would rhyme a lot about the visions that I would see in my head. I would see what I'm saying when I'm saying it to you. Like sometimes me and my friends would be driving down the street and off the top of the head, we'd just be rapping. You know, rapping about stuff that we knew or that we saw, that we visualized. And for me, it would be stuff that I visualized. I would be the driver. So I'd be visualizing something and I'd talk about it. I'd rap about it. And you know what? I found out that it's hard to get an audience to close their eyes and visualize what you see. You know, and you can. I've done it many times where I've been cheered on stages, but there's been other stages where they weren't really feeling me. So... Mm-hmm. The best way, I thought, to make someone actually see what you see or what I imagine is to put it on film.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Good. Took it a step further.
I took it a step further. It's like a graduation process. Mm-hmm. Everything on the planet graduates. Trees grow. Babies grow. Everything. Everything grows. And so you can't be a rapper forever. You know, I was 20 then. You know what I'm saying? How am I going to be 40 years old and a rapper? You know, so I graduated, and I'm embracing this graduation process. And, you know, hopefully one day I could walk down the aisle with my cap and gown, you know?
Yeah. Let's talk about, do you have any visions of writing any books or going on any speaking tours to inspire young people?
Oh yes, sir. I've actually spoke on multiple occasions. I actually have an offer right now to go speak with the Black Student Union at one of the community colleges out here. However, that's on the agenda. That's on the agenda. Writing a book, that's something that I've been doing. I've been wanting to do since I was, you know, younger than 10 years old. I tell you, I got, when I was 10, I had pages of stuff that I used to write. So I got it all in me, you know, and hence the book of Judas. I think that begs for an actual book. So that's on the
plan. Man, if you do a book of Judas and you do your research, because I do think there's actually a book of Judas that he wrote, because I kind of did some research. And I think the whole perspective of giving Judas a perspective from your perspective is kind of cool because it expands our consciousness.
Exactly.
I think sometimes we can be what I call spiritually dummied down, meaning that we don't fully think through. Like sometimes people just read the word, but I was taught you're supposed to read the word through the eyes of revelation. The Bible is written in a way that whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever situation you're in, when you read the word, you're going to always get something out of it from a different perspective. Like, there's just, like, so many different perspectives. Like, I always tell my friends, like, when you look at the story of Samson, because this is something that's really, that you're hitting on. Really, Judas didn't have to commit suicide, and Samson didn't have to commit suicide. Because he got his anointing back, he could have asked for God. You can ask for God what you really want. You can ask God to give you the desires of your heart. But if you're not in the right set of mind, he just said, let me die. Let me avenge my enemies and die. And guess what? God gave them exactly what he asked for.
Yeah, I mean, that's beautiful. I mean, but, you know, the one thing that you have to understand is that God has a will. God has a role for you to play. And Judas had his role that he was asked to play. And, you know, if you even read the Bible before that betrayal even happened, they addressed him earlier in the scriptures as Judas, the one who betrayed Jesus. Do you know? So he had a role. He was destined. That's what he was born to do. Brother, you was born to do what you're doing. Samson was born to die like he died. Brother, so if God has a will, God's will be done whether you want it to be or not. You know? I believe it was God's will for him to die like that.
Now, when it comes to this, I know that God made us free moral agents.
Right.
So God gives us a choice. And sometimes our choices causes us to choose a choice, and then it causes us to choose another choice, as my brother explained it. And then you find yourself getting farther and farther away from God, and you keep, check this out. When he gave me this revelation this morning, the prodigal son kept making choices that would bring him away from God. But when he came to himself,
right.
It's when you come to yourself and you draw yourself back to God, then your choices change. The closer you are to the light, the closer you are to God, your choices will always be different.
Yeah, I mean, that is one way of looking at it. There's definitely another way of looking at it, too, because God is so expansive. Another way of looking at it was be like, yeah, you got choice of free will, but at the same time, you didn't have a choice on whether to come into this world as a man or a woman. You wasn't in control of where you were born, Seattle or Jamaica, where you're from, brother, or New York. We wasn't in control of that. So we're control of how we deal with what we have, but we're really not in control because God pretty much sets the tone for our thought process.
Gives us boundary lines.
Well, I think before the foundation of the world, this is what I've been doing my teachings of. Before the foundation of the world, Jesus made a conscious decision that he was going to die for mankind. Mm-hmm. I believe that God made us free moral agents. Like, I believe in predestination, but I also believe that we have a free will and a free choice.
Oh yeah, we are getting deep, and I'm a deep guy by definition, because this is something that's very very it's something that has to be pondered, because it's not something that we can just gloss over and say, oh yeah, I can do what I want to, but we have to understand that God is in control. God is the one who created the world. If I had it my way, I'd be flying right now. If I had it my way, brother, I would not be in this cold room sitting with you. I'd be in a mansion, you know. So if we had free choice in every respect, then maybe things, conditions would be different. So we do have choice, but it's a limited choice. You know, there's limitations. We're human beings. We're just babies. God is going to be here. He was here when before we got here. And he'll be here after we're gone. So
what do you want to say to young people, like they're listening to this interview they're excited about your play becoming a movie, and they say, hey, I want to be inspired to write. I want to be inspired to create. What do you want to say to these young people to inspire them to make a choice to be creative?
What I want to say is just to get up and do something. Get up and do something. It doesn't matter how small or how big that something is. Get up and just do something. If it's nothing but just being nice to someone, giving someone a smile or calling someone that's down on their luck, say, hey, you know, I just want to say hi to you, let you know I was thinking about you. That's God's work right there. You know what I'm saying? Taking care of your kids. That's God's work, because in that respect, you're not giving the church no crackheads to preach off the streets, you know? So, look, God's work is more than just preaching or standing somewhere with a microphone in your hand. God's work is being a good steward over this life that he gave us. And he gave us all breath. He gave us all intelligence to a degree. And be a good steward over that. That would be my message to the kids.
All right, man, this has been a great interview. I'm going to get with Marquise Franklin, my original producer. We're going to chop it up.
Chop it up, man.
We're going to chop it up. Push it in. We're in the studios with Fatima Joy.
Hi.
And Anthony Townsend. And yes, this is BK. And we'll see you next week.
Bringing to you live the best in the Northwest. BK Presents, featuring international and local gospel artists, civic leaders and community workers, authors and bloggers, nonprofit organizations, and business leaders.
Tune in on demand on BKPresents.com.
BK Presents, promoting the good news in contemporary fashion.
Stop by and visit our podcast library today. Tell a friend to lock it in on BKPresents.com.